Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Prince of Persuasion by Amy Kanaday, narrated by Nick Cracknell. Chapter 1. Over a week had passed since the solstice fires had burned through the kingdom of Cenarios, yet the candles in the Yule log centerpieces still flickered on the tabletops of the Fellwright Inn. A young woman sat in the quietest corner of the dining room, hunched over a thick ledger book with a pencil in her hand. The methodical scratching of the graphite against the paper seemed to hold her in full hypnosis while she balanced the inn's accounts. Food, wine, laundering services, dish soap for the scullery maids, every business expenditure was known to Novi's watchful eye. She knew every figure of the business, except for how much tax the kingdom of Cenarios took from Miss Crumley, and how much profit Miss Crumley had remaining for Novi's meagre wages. On this particular day, the inn was filled to capacity, but not with their usual clientele. Almost half of the guests were dark elves, the demon-born, formerly known as the Naki. Most of them belonged to the noble and upper classes. They didn't usually stay at run-down, shabby establishments like the Fellwright Inn unless there was a big event in the capital city of Cenaria, which was only a half a day's journey away. The dark elves were too excited about their destination to complain about the cobwebs in the rafters, the stale beer, or the lackluster service. They were headed to Cenaria for a grand event happening at the castle the day after tomorrow. It was the sort of event which Novi had no interest in whatsoever, which was the reason why she didn't notice Miss Crumley yelling at her from her place behind the bar.
"Novi! Novi! Get your lazy ass over here and help wash those dishes!"
Novi glowered at the large stack of dirty plates and silverware piled up beside her before flipping the ledger book shut. Novi was many things. A barmaid, a kitchen maid, a scullery maid, a chambermaid, an accountant, a cook. Being lazy wasn't anywhere on that list. She didn't have time to be lazy. She hardly had time to eat or sleep. Gathering the dishes on top of the ledger book, she wove her way between tables and chairs, pushed askew by their numerous diners who still occupied them. One of the elves suddenly yelled out so loud that she almost tripped over the threshold into the kitchen. She clutched the plates tight against her rail-thin body and tried to steady herself. By some miracle, all she dropped was a handful of dirty silverware. Novi gasped in relief that she hadn't dropped the entire stack of plates. She couldn't afford to replace any more of them, not out of her wages. She was already teetering on the verge of debt to her employer, and it would be some time before she could extricate herself from the clutches of the Fellwright Inn.
"You're lucky you didn't drop those," Miss Crumley warned.
The dwarven woman scowled as if she was disappointed that she'd lost the chance to withhold even more from her best employee's earnings.
"The gods must be smiling upon me today."
Novi straightened herself up and brought the plates away from her body, then bit down on her lip to keep it from trembling. Maybe the gods were smiling, because they'd just played a joke on her. The front of her apron was now covered in greasy food scraps and leftovers. She tried not to curse out loud as she felt the melted butter and sauce and grease melting through the apron and into her dress underneath it, staining it forever. It was pretty nice for a hand-me-down. Not any more. While Novi silently kicked herself over ruining her last decent dress, her boss's beady little eyes glared through the window partition between the kitchen and the bar.
"What's all the commotion out there for?"
"I don't know," Novi sulked. She slid the stack of dirty plates over to the scullery maid and stooped down to pick up the silverware she'd dropped.
"Well, what are you waiting for?"
Miss Crumley snapped on her way back to the bar.
"Go find out what it is. The last thing I need right now is to break up a fight between a bunch of dark elves."
"As if you would," Novi muttered the second she was out of earshot. She wiped her soiled hands on a rag and used her sleeve to blot the sweat from her forehead. Even though it was winter, the tavern had a way of getting too warm when it was this full. Or maybe it was because Novi and the poor scullery maids were the only ones hustling in the tavern. Miss Crumley preferred to sit behind the bar and pinch pennies by watering down the drinks. She'd do just about anything to save a bit of copper. While her boss watched from the bar, Novi pushed up her sleeves and headed straight for the crowd of dark elves. She might have hesitated if there were any other kind of fae, such as dwarves or even fairies, because dwarves could pack a powerful punch, and fairies were famous for their nasty bites. And while it would have been suicide for a human woman to try and break up a fight between a couple of vampires or lycanthropes, Novi knew the Dark Elves wouldn't hurt her. At least, not intentionally. It was true that the Naki were 3 times as strong as her, and almost twice as big, but they treated their beloved humans like pets. The wealthy nobles made sure they were healthy and productive, and as long as they knew their place in society, they were provided for. Of all the races of Fae that lived in the Illunian Empire, the Dark Elves were like gods walking among the humans. They lived to be hundreds of years old, and they had powers that humans could only dream of. They were their protectors, their guardians, and sometimes their lovers. That's what all the fuss was about. Slight as she was, Novi cut through the clamor with ease, only to find that her guests weren't arguing at all. On the contrary, they were elated. Most of the patrons had left their tables and were cramming themselves all around and against the windows. It had to be important if the reserve nobles were losing their minds over it. The mystery was revealed the minute Novi saw the carriage parked directly outside the tavern door. This wasn't any ordinary carriage. This one belonged to the royal family. She could tell because of how many mounted red cloaks of the royal guard were escorting it. She could also tell because it was more brilliant and beautiful than any carriage that had ever rolled past the Fellwright Inn during the 8 years that she'd worked there. It was painted in the signature colors of the Blackwoods, a deep, dark shade of red that bled into a stunning rendition of gold, the colors of fire. Of all the royal families living in the Illunian Empire, only the Blackwoods of Cenarios were allowed to display that particular combination of colors. It was said that the Blackwood family had textile workers and artisans and carriage builders who were specially trained to recreate this visual fire called Blackwood Red. Anyone caught making counterfeit items in that same style was never seen or heard from again. The reasoning was that you could only possess something dyed or painted in the Blackwood's colors if it was given to you from one of the royal family themselves. And now, one of their carriages had stopped on its way to the castle and was sitting outside the place where Novi lived and worked. Half the mounted guards swung down from their horses, while the others remained vigilant in their saddles. Their long, heavy capes were also dyed in the same bold, fiery colors as the carriage. A few of the tavern patrons backed away from the window and slipped quietly back into their chairs. The only people still staring out the windows were humans. This sort of thing didn't happen in their backwater little village. When the door swung open, Novi forgot all about the food smeared across her apron. She was too busy wrestling with her racing heart, which was currently trying to crawl out of her throat. It was one thing to confront a rowdy group of demon-born dark elves, and something entirely different to come face to face with one of the royal family. She found herself shying away as a tall man dressed in a beautiful green cloak walked in and took a look around. Novi let out a sigh of relief. His light brown hair proved that he wasn't one of the Blackwoods, although she knew by his dark eyes that he was a dark elf just like them. He wore a red-gold sigil pin on his lapel. It was the crest of the Chimera, which meant whatever position he held at court, it had been assigned to him directly from the king. His glittering black eyes swiveled in the barmaid's direction, and she tried not to yelp. The last thing she wanted was to invoke any of the demon fire that was believed to have turned all the Dark Elves' eyes black as coal.
"Good afternoon. Is your kitchen still open, or have we missed our chance at having a quick bite to eat?"
"We're still serving,"
Novi squeaked. Even if the kitchen was closed, and even if Miss Crumley threw a fit, there was no way in 7 hells that she was going to tell this man no. Not when he had the ear of King Balerion Blackwood.
"Ah, wonderful. May the gods smile upon you," he said with a relieved nod.
Then he spun around on his heel and walked back out the door, closing it carefully behind him. Novi stared at the threshold, wondering what had just happened. Was he coming back? Was he running away? Maybe he was going to try the bakery down the road instead. That had to be it. Their cakes were delectable. Novi couldn't afford them, although her dearest friend Callie used her generous allowance to buy her one every year on her birthday. Novi hung her head, and that's when she remembered the situation with her dress, another gift from Callie. The nicest thing Novi owned now looked like the rest of her, marred with grease and dripping with sweat. She felt a few itchy strands of her long, dirty hair sticking to the back of her neck. She cursed herself for not taking a bath last night, but Miss Crumley charged extra for hot water, and it was a luxury Novi couldn't afford. And being that it was just after the winter solstice, she had no desire to dunk her head in a tub of frigid water, let alone strip naked and sit in it. The more she began to sweat,
the more she began to regret that decision. Despite her self-consciousness, Novi tiptoed over to the window and saw the nobleman standing at the door of the carriage as if trying to help someone get out.
"It's the concubines!"
one of the elven men exclaimed beside Novi. A few more heads shoved in around her for a better look.
"Can't be all 13 of them in there,"
said a human man behind her.
"Of course not, you fool,"
an elven woman replied with a subtle roll of her black eyes.
"They're being brought to Blackwood Castle from all across Scenarios. No doubt there are a number of royal carriages headed for the capital at this very moment."
"Why aren't the girls getting out?"
one of them asked.
"Is this carriage a decoy, perhaps?"
"Not with that many guards,"
another female voice reasoned.
"The girls are probably putting on their coats.
Oh, I can't wait to see what they're wearing this season. The ones chosen to be concubines always have such an eye for fashion."
"It's because humans are more daring than we are,"
a third demon-born woman agreed.
"I suppose when the span of your life is so brief, you're more likely to take larger risks with what little time you have. Could that be the case with you, miss?"
Novi didn't realize who the noble woman was speaking to until the woman turned to look at her with a piercing pair of fathomless eyes. It was all Novi could do not to confess that she was fed up with Miss Crumley sponging off of her, on top of her expecting to bake and cook and clean and balance the ledger every month. Nor did she admit that she was planning to apply for a position at that bakery down the road, just as soon as she found a different place to live. And because the woman gazing back into her eyes was a dark elf, Novi didn't have to speak those words out loud. The woman heard her unprotected thoughts as clear as a bell. She gave a nod before stealing another glimpse out the window. A man behind them laughed to himself.
"Those girls are taking on quite a risk," he chortled.
The man in the green robe was helping a beautiful young woman out of the carriage, followed by a second woman who was just as lovely. Novi watched as the fashionable ladies braced themselves from the freezing wind in exquisite full-length coats that cost more than what she made in a whole year. They were both lucky enough to be dark-haired, just like the royal family. The women looked at the sign hanging out front, then at each other. The brunette wrinkled her nose in disdain, and the black-haired one leaned in close to make some sort of joke. The man behind Novi snickered again.
"Yes, I'm afraid the risk is all on their end, and we all know which end that is. I wonder how long it'll take for Fallon the Talon to rip those pretty things apart. Judging by how long His Royal Highness has taken to arrive at this arrangement, I believe it will be quite some time," another noble replied.
"I bet you it takes him no less than 3 years to go through the lot of them."
3 years? Are you mad?"
another voice gasped.
"I have it on good authority that the royal physician has been summoned in the dead of night because Fallon the Talon had made women nearly bleed to death in his bed. Twice!" "My money's on Tristan the Piston. Now that the pressure's off, he'll probably prove himself before the end of the month."
"Would you care to make that wager official?"
"Yes, I believe I would."
Novi shuddered as visions of women in blood-stained sheets screaming through the castle played through her head. She inched away from the group of elves and returned to the bar, where Miss Crumley looked ready to pull out some hair, although it wasn't clear if it would be hers or Novi's.
"What's going on?"
"It's two of the concubines for Prince Fallon,"
she explained as discreetly as possible.
"They're coming inside for a quick meal before continuing on to the castle."
Miss Crumley's beady eyes opened wider than they seemed capable of. She waddled to the back of the tavern and returned with a box of expensive glassware that was only used for highborns and nobility.
"Help me wipe these off and put them on the tray," she ordered. "We can't have them drinking out of the same cups used for everyone else."
"Why not?"
"Because those girls may be nothing but whores, but they're wealthy and famous whores, and they're headed directly for the prince's bedchambers."
Miss Crumley snickered to herself as a gleam filled her greedy eyes.
"I can auction off the glasses they've used after they've gone, provided you don't trip through the kitchen door and break them."
Like so many times before, Novi held her tongue. She wasn't naturally clumsy. She blamed it on a broken tile that always seemed to catch the toe of her boot. She had broken plenty of plates and had big holes in her shoes to prove what a nuisance that dislodged tile was. Yet Miss Crumley never repaired the floor. It was as though she derived great pleasure from sabotaging her employees at every chance she got. Novi grabbed a clean towel and began to wipe the dust from the glasses, all while listening to her boss's muttering.
"Can't say I'll ever understand what would make a highborn woman want to waste her potential and become a glorified brood mare for those twisted princes. Why, there's not enough copper crowns in all the Scenarios that would convince me to be given to Prince Fallon, like a bouquet of flowers or a box of chocolates."
Novi took one look at Miss Crumley and choked back a laugh.
"Don't worry, I don't think you're Prince Fallon's type."
A pair of beady eyes glared at her from across the bar.
Think you're funny, do you? Remember what I said about reining in that tongue of yours? It has a way of getting you into trouble.
Novi glanced away, hoping to hide her smile. Her little jab had been just that. Little, but it was worth it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Crumley. Please don't dock my pay. I only meant that His Royal Highness wouldn't know the first thing to do with such an independent, strong-minded woman in his harem.
The dwarven woman raised a suspicious eyebrow and frowned.
Probably not. But you better start thinking before you speak. One of these days that tongue of yours is going to get you into more trouble than your scrawny ass can work its way out of.
Novi nodded her head, smiling more from her inner laughter than from any actual agreement.
I'm no soothsayer, but I can tell you exactly what life will be like for any girls that wind up in that godforsaken castle.
Miss Crumley blew a loose strand of wiry grey hair out of her red face as she furiously polished another glass.
They'll spend every day parading round in their frivolous, frilly outfits, only to have them torn to shreds by Fallon the Talon every night. Then, after he's grown bored of them, he'll pass them down to his little brother. They don't call Prince Tristan the Piston because he made the steam engine popular. Oh, no, that was his brother's doing. Tristan's just moving parts, moving in and out, all night long.
Suddenly, Novi wasn't grinning quite so wide. She watched as Miss Crumley rummaged below the counter and brought up a bottle of her best red wine. Then she jammed a corkscrew into the bottle and began to twist without mercy. The dry cork squeaked and groaned as the unrelenting screw drove in deeper and deeper. Novi began to turn pale as the red liquid splashed on the other side of the cork. All she could think of was Fallon the Talon doing the same thing to his concubines until they squeaked and groaned and bled all over his sheets like a spilled bottle of red wine.
All that effort and no children to Tristan's name,
Miss Crumley said as she pulled out the cork. Still horrified, Novi watched the red wine gush into one glass, then another.
That's the curse of the Chimera, though. I almost feel sorry for what those Blackwood boys are going to do to those pretty little idiots over there. Almost. I can't say I feel much sympathy for highborn girls. They never seem to have any useful skills. All they're good for is lying on their backs and pushing out more highborn girls to grow up and do the same damn thing.
While she silently agreed with her boss, Novi cringed, hoping that nobody had overheard Miss Crumley speaking so badly of the royal family in such a public place. The dark elves took care of the poorest communities and protected them from evils like sickness and the occasional vampire attack, but when someone committed a crime against one of the Naki, they seemed to disappear. In Scenarios, punishments were severe for those who dared to bite the hand that fed them. The tavern door swung open, and the man in green escorted two girls and three guards to an empty table. The girls didn't sit down to eat. Instead, they kept a watchful eye on the concubines through their black armor as the other patrons ogled and admired them from nearby. Miss Crumley put six glasses on a tray and filled half with water and half with wine, then handed it to Novi and practically shoved her towards their table.
"What is that smell?"
the brunette sneered as Novi set down their beverages. She refused to look at her servant, preferring to glare at her wine glass as she lifted it to her nose.
It's as though someone's been walking around with a mutton chop in their pocket for the last fortnight.
It took Novi everything she had not to crack a joke about meat or pockets, or meat left in pockets. Another bead of sweat fell down her ribcage, and she knew exactly where the smell was coming from. She tried her best to keep her distance as she waited on the concubines and their escort, and they gave her the courtesy of treating her as if she were invisible, which was exactly what she wanted. The thing about working in a tavern just off the King's Road is that one is bound to hear a lot of gossip from around the kingdom, especially gossip from the castle. Whenever courtiers stopped by, Novi always kept their drinks topped off to help loosen their lips, because that's when she got the best stories. Today was no different.
I can't go back and tell Queen Lena that I only have 12 girls,
the man in green hissed to one of the concubines.
It's bad luck to have even numbers, and you know how she is.
We haven't yet been introduced to Her Majesty, so we really couldn't say,
said the brunette. She didn't appear nearly as upset as the man in green. He shook his head.
Her Majesty insisted on one girl for every hour of the day. That's 13 girls, and now I only have 12 arriving that are eligible. I'll have to think of a damn good excuse as to why this happened today, of all days. Oh, if only the last girl hadn't...
A commotion in the kitchen between Miss Crumley and the scullery maid distracted Novi from overhearing much more, although the truth was she'd heard enough.
She stole another glance at the two future concubines she was serving, and couldn't help wondering what had happened to the 13th girl. Had she changed her mind at the last minute and decided not to join the others in the Temple of the Concubines? Had she come to her senses and decided that fame and fortune weren't worth being torn apart after all? What could possibly make a high-born girl want to live in a cold, damp, creepy castle and be ravaged by insatiable dark elves every night? The few men that Novi had been with were such selfish lovers that she felt certain two elven men nicknamed the Talon and the Piston would be 13 times as awful. Even though they knew what they were signing up for, Novi still felt sorry for the young women who'd have to entertain the two princes. There were only two reasons she could imagine why anyone would volunteer for such a fate. That they were either desperate, or they were money-hungry. Everyone knew that concubines who produced heirs for nobility were set for life. They lived out their days in luxury, wrapped in silk and feathers and jewels. They had enough wealth that they could send some of it home to their relatives. Novi didn't have any relatives to send money to, and a silk dress was about as useful to her as a pet chimera. She had no interest in fame or fortune, although she did find herself daydreaming often about what it would be like to soak in a hot bath with fancy soaps and oils and shampoos. That was all she wanted in that moment, was a nice, long, hot bath, along with a clean dress. It didn't even have to be a nice dress, just one that didn't smell like a rotten mutton chop. After swallowing a second glass of wine and enjoying a small meal, the trio rose to leave, and the dark elves rose to see their beloved concubines return to their carriage. The young woman with the chestnut brown hair turned up her nose before turning her back to Novi, but the girl with the jet black hair glanced her way as the man in green helped her with her coat. Just as Novi was scooping up the copper coins on the table, the concubine carefully twisted a jeweled ring off her finger and added it to the pile.
"Here's a little something extra to help you out," she said, glancing at the stained front of Novi's dress. "I know it's not much, but you seem to need it more than I do."
At first, Novi didn't know how to respond. The girls she felt so sorry for felt the same way about her. Novi wasn't the one who was signing away her body and soul to the Blackwood brothers for a bit of coin. She wasn't going to bed later that night with a man named Fallon the Talon. She wasn't going to be like that bottle of red wine, groaning and squeaking as the screw was forced into the cork until red liquid came rushing out. She'd heard plenty of stories from plenty of courtiers about exactly what happened behind those castle walls, and she wanted none of it. But still, that ring would fetch a good amount of money. Enough for her to break free of Miss Crumley and rent a nicer room with a nicer landlady. It might even be enough money for her to take a short vacation before applying for that position at the bakery down the road. And even if Novi didn't get that job, she'd have enough money to last until she found another one. She reached out to gather the coins and the ring into her hands, but Miss Crumley had already beaten her to it. Novi watched through bitter, angry, watering eyes as her shrewd slumlord scooped the money and the ring into her apron pocket, rendering it and the freedom it held lost to her forever. Miss Crumley waited for the guards to escort the ladies back into the carriage. The moment the tavern door was shut, she lifted up the glass that the brunette had been drinking from.
"What a fine collector's item this would be,"
she announced in her brash voice. The tavern customers began to pull away from the window and scoot closer to her, all while untying their purse strings. But Novi didn't stay to find out how much they might bid on those glasses. She headed straight for the kitchen and grabbed the big kettle off the stove before lugging it upstairs to her little room. If Miss Crumley was going to take away the ring that would have let her escape this hellhole, she was taking a long, hot bath.
Chapter 2. Prince Fallon's tailor was putting the final touches on the new suit he was to wear at his 333rd birthday celebration when the familiar sound of heavy footsteps came storming down the hall. He took a breath, then braced himself accordingly for the impending theatrics. 3, 2, 1. The doors to Fallon's private bedchamber slammed open with a bang. His leg jerked as a pin was accidentally stuck into his flesh.
"Oh, my deepest apologies, Your Highness,"
Lorenzo gasped while looking up at his employer with worry. The prince gave a dismissive wave of his hand. "It's no bother. It's certainly not your fault," Fallon assured him. He turned to cast a disapproving look at his younger brother as he barged into the room. Tristan had a talent for melodramatics, and not much else.
"Mother says you're not being cooperative about the birthday gift we arranged for you," he sneered. "Whatever do you mean by that?"
Fallon stood perfectly still while Lorenzo took a second measurement of his inseam. I've been nothing but cooperative since Father made the formal request for me to take a harem. I let Mother plan the menu for my birthday dinner and invite everyone she wanted. I let you plan the entertainment for later in the evening and invite your questionable friends as well. I even went so far as to let Mother and the Royal Council select all of my girls. I haven't had so much as one word of input on what they should look like or how they should be dressed.
That's what I'm here to speak to you about, is your girls.
Oh? Would you rather they were not dressed at all? Fallon couldn't help grinning as his brother's frown of frustration turned into a scowl. Perhaps you'd recommend not even taking the trouble to present them to the court. You could have spoken up about adopting a revised ceremonial procedure, if you'd ever bothered to attend any of the council meetings, that is. If you'd been there, you'd already know that I'll be doing things much differently with my concubinage than you ever did with yours. Tristan rolled his eyes and strode up to the pedestal where Fallon was standing. He placed his hands on his hips and planted his feet on the floor, forcing Lorenzo to walk around him to finish taking his measurements. Fallon tried not to smile as he watched his tailor give Tristan a wide berth.
"Oh, I know all about how differently you plan on doing things," he said.
"Mother just informed me that there will only be 13 girls instead of the 33 we'd originally planned. What are you thinking? Are you mad?" Fallon smirked at the thought. "If I didn't know any better, I'd say you're jealous that there won't be enough of them for you to pick through my cast-offs." Of course Tristan was jealous. He was the youngest of three brothers, and last in line to his family's throne. He was accustomed to getting his brothers' hand-me-downs, and he was envious of their higher rank. After their eldest brother, Dylan, died in the last war, Tristan's sense of entitlement had become atrocious. He helped himself to Dylan's belongings as if they were his own. That included his harem of concubines who had no one left to serve and nowhere else to go. And because none of them had given him a child, none of them had been blessed with riches. Instead, they lived the remainder of their brief human lives serving their master in different ways. And they were replaced over the next century. Unlike Tristan, Fallon never had quite the same obsession with taking on extra concubines. He was too busy taking on the extra duties of the heir apparent. Those duties began to multiply almost weekly when King Balerion contracted a mysterious illness and began to waste away. It began right after Dylan died, and as time went on, the royal family accepted that he was suffering from a broken heart. At least, that's what the royal priestess Minerva said it was. Nothing else could explain his fading vitality. Now he was old and tired beyond his years. The only thing that seemed to bring him any comfort or joy was knowing that his kingdom was in good hands. Fallon's hands. Like most everyone else in the royal household, Fallon overlooked Tristan's boudoir activities. He saw it not as a flaw in his character, but as an enormous burden lifted off of his shoulders. Fallon was content to run the kingdom if Tristan could be trusted to prove himself able to sire enough heirs to secure the succession of the Blackwood dynasty. He had complete freedom to bed whomever he liked, as long as she was eligible, willing, and able. Nobody knew exactly how many women had walked through Tristan's chamber doors over the last 100 years, although everyone at court knew that he should have had at least a handful of children by now. It was the only duty Tristan had ever been given. Actually, it was the only duty that he ever took on, and he couldn't even manage that. With the succession still at risk, political factions had begun to spring up and grow more vocal around the kingdom of Cenarios and the lands beyond its borders. Doubts began to creep into conversation about the Blackwood dynasty coming to an end. Driven by duty, Fallon couldn't let that happen. There had been a Blackwood on the throne for the last millennia. Cenarios was enjoying one of the longest stretches of economic prosperity it had ever seen, and the city of Cenaria was viewed not only as the capital of Cenarios, but of the entire Illunian Empire. Fallon couldn't risk losing it all now. Not when they'd come so far as a kingdom and an empire. He was willing to do anything for his family, and that meant doing anything for his kingdom. The rising number of potential enemies within those factions was stressful enough. To make matters more complicated, King Balerion had taken a turn for the worse. So it came as no surprise when Queen Lena and the Royal Council approached him to carry out yet another pressing task, the most important one of all, proving himself capable of making little princes and princesses. But it wasn't as simple as finding a suitable bride and getting on with settling down like the commoners did. No, Fallon would remain unmarried until he'd proven his virility with a royal
Sample complete. Ready to continue?